You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, this is Greg with the Grindline Podcast, and I'm here to talk to you about DraftKings. With mobile betting now live in Michigan, it has never been easier to get in on the action and make those games mean just a little bit more. All you have to do is set your lineup, sit back, and watch your games. It's that simple. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion, that's billion with a B, to users across all sports. So work on filling that wallet today with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app and sign up using code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Tyler, my man, it is you and I. We have lost our overseer, Greg, for the evening, who is in a bit of a recovery. But how's it going, man? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back on here and talking hockey and Red Wings hockey.
You sounded really unsure when you say I'm doing good. I'm not really
my arm still hurts, so let's just put it that way. But you know, whatever. It is what it is. I'm doing good. It seems like the Red Wings are making some moves here, there, and everywhere. So that's good to see, and we will touch on that. But before we do that, how are you doing?
Not too bad. It's been a busy, really 2-3 weeks for me. I know we had to unfortunately postpone a couple weeks ago one of our favorite guests, which hopefully we'll have him back on here shortly. But it's been with just day to day has been busier than I was expecting. So.
Yeah, I hear you. It just seems like every time we go to record, one of us can't do it at the same time. And we apologize to our fans about that. And, you know, we'll hopefully get better with that as time goes on here. But, you know, life goes on and we're going to do this and we're going to do it to the best of our ability.
Thanks for the pep talk, coach.
That's right.
It should be a pretty straightforward episode today. We've got a few items we're going to touch on to include that. Obviously, we're going to get your thoughts on the trades. Since you weren't able to sit down with Greg and I, we went through those, as well as Jacob Vrana, how he's looked since coming across. Nothing too crazy to talk with Ponick. We're going to touch on some Rasmussen, Chalowski, and Larkin. So really kind of all the young guns of Detroit, and then anything else we can think of and waste time on. So, but yeah, I think
sounds good to me.
What I think we'll start with is I kind of want to go your thoughts on the trades since you weren't on here and what your initial feeling was. I know we texted about it and we were talking through it there, but I know that you were pretty passionate about the Mantha deal. And then I just kind of want to see from there what you felt about it and then how you think that Vrana can fit into this roster as we move along. And that'll kind of take us right into it.
So initially I was kind of pissed because it said, you know, the first tweet was Mantha going to Washington. And the first thing is you think, oh shit, did they get enough? And then, you know, this return starts coming out and it's like, oh my God, Yzerman did something. Like he did something that, you know, this is something Ken Holland would never have the balls to do. And Yzerman just said, you know, we're going to try and make a trade And it's funny, you know, you listen to his presser or whatever afterwards and, you know, kind of how it came together. And it kind of was like a last minute thing that they were just kind of working on all day long. And then finally it kind of all came together at the end there. And, you know, it sucks as a fan because, you know, I sat next to you on opening night in 2019 when he had four goals and, you know.
A four goal slaughter against Dallas.
And it was just like, you know, and that goes back, you know, I met the guy at the at Joe Louis Arena in the Olympia room there. And, you know, he signed my jersey. And that's kind of a fanboy moment. You know, it's kind of cool. He was a good guy. And again, like I said before, he was a good player. We wanted a lot more from him. Unfortunately, it just didn't happen in Detroit. We move on. Now to talk about Verana. I like Verana. I do. I always have. Even when the Caps had that Stanley Cup run with Verana there, he was not a huge piece of the team, but he was a younger guy who could shoot. He's got some nice moves. And I think it's one of those moves that it's going to help both teams. You know,
it should. And I think it already has started to as well.
Kind of. I mean, Mantha's got three goals in three games at the Caps, or is it something like that, right?
Yeah, so, he came out and scored in his first two. I don't know if I hadn't seen what he had done lately.
He scored against Boston on Sunday. So I think it's three goals in three games, unless they played last night, which they potentially could have.
Tell you what, let's check it out. Since being acquired, April 13th, goal and assist. 15th against Buffalo, one goal. He's had four goals in four games. He's got 5 points in four games. Yeah, and he's averaging ice time isn't anything special. He had 18 minutes against Boston last night, or a couple nights ago, I apologize.
Yeah,
so he's scoring a goal a pop right now. I mean, he's actually had goals in five straight games looking on NHL.com. So yeah. He hasn't really missed a beat going to that loaded Caps roster.
Well, and the thing is, too, it's like, you know, you always kind of, like, after a trade like this, you always think, oh, man, what if they would have kept him? And to me, with this kind of trade, it's there's a lot of risk involved in it, because if Mantha becomes a 40, 45 goal scorer every single year, then and Jacob Verana just, you know, turns into a, you know, maybe a little bit better version of Gustav Nyquist or you know, something similar to that, then, you know, we're not going to be too happy with the trade. But, I mean, the reason it makes me happy that a trade like this can happen is because, like I alluded to before, if Ken Holland were here, that trade ain't happening.
Probably not.
If Ken Holland were here, the David Savard facilitation does not happen. So you're seeing the Yzerman effect
now,
on this team.
Now, to counterpoint that, though, Holland, technically, I mean, you could really say the last 2-3 years of his tenure, it would have been more likely or seem.
Yeah.
You could compare. Yeah, you can make the Thomas Tatar comparison with that.
Sure.
But
yeah, no, absolutely.
That's about, I think that's probably the closest trade you can really levy it against. But even still, that was what, strictly picks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was just picks. So it was first and a second, I believe. Or two first, a first and two seconds or something?
There's a 1-2 and a 3 in that one. Because I think we actually have their third round pick this year, and that finishes the deal. It's either this year or next season, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But my point being, though, is I think what surprised everyone so much about this trade, much as you were, is the fact that they got a guy at a similar level, if you look at the stats, in Jake Vrana. But then they also picked up Richard Panik, who, as Greg and I touched on last week, he's one of only a couple Red Wings that are actually signed past this season.
Yeah.
And what that ends up doing for you is now you've got your replacement for Val Filppula, Franz Nielsen, a Luke Glendening, maybe not so much Glendening, but you're Darren Helms, guys like that. He's your depth lockup for several years. And guess what? You don't necessarily have to protect him either. He's a guy that you can leave exposed. Maybe that's a trade that you make with Seattle when it comes down to it. And like I said, we talked about this on the previous episode, so I don't want to kind of re-beat the horse, but I think the because of the players that he brought in the trade, that was the shocker. I think the pick value was there that we were basically expecting from a top team, first, second round pick. But the players put it up and above that expectation of, holy shit, he really pulled that off.
Like a first and a second for Mantha, like, and if it was just Richard Ponick, you know, we'd be pissed. Or if it was just Jacob Verana, we might be pissed. You know, the fact that they were able
to get Ponick. Oh, you mean if it was just the players?
Yeah, if it was just the players and or just the picks, I think we'd be pissed. But the fact that it was all four, and that's amazing, like I said. And Mantha may turn out to be a 30-35 goal scorer there with Washington. I don't think he was going to do that here. And if he did, it wouldn't have been for a couple of years. So whatever, it's lost cause. It's over with. He's playing with Backstrom and Oshie now on the second line. And
yeah, it's a pretty line.
Well, and I wish him well. I really do. I wish him well.
It's
one of my favorite Red Wings players. So it's unfortunate, but it was a good return, I thought. And Ponick is going to be a good player. I think Verana is going to be a good player. And Ponick is a winning player. You know, he's been on Tampa Bay. He's been on some pretty good Chicago teams. He's been on some really good teams in his career. So, I mean, anytime you can bring guys like that into the organization, even if they're here for a short period of time, I feel like that's a good thing.
And they got that from both players. I think that's key. Yeah, as they go through the revamping of the roster, because as we've talked about, all I think about eight guys are under contract for next season, or they have to worry about eight players. It's not
very many, that's for sure.
So, but Verana is going to be one of those guys that Yzerman's going to have to make that decision on, because he's an RFA after this season. But it gives him leverage, because that's what they have the cap space, and they need to figure out what they want to do with their core. We thought Mantha was that core. That's changing. Verana, for what he can do, we'll see what happens. I mean, he came out with a bang, got that opening goal against Chicago. It was fantastic on that breakaway. Kind of fell silent in game two. We're not going to talk about that second Chicago game because fuck them, and we also look terrible. And then he missed the first game against Dallas, played yesterday, and then he had a beautiful assist to Filppula. That was a cross-ice saucer pass that Filppula actually shot, to many of our surprise.
Wow.
It was actually a good shot, no less. He went opposite way when the goalie was coming across. It was a great play overall, but I think what we've seen so far from Verana is that he can score, he can pass, and he can fly. And I think that what we've seen with a lot of what Yzerman's done with the roster this year, and really Blashill to that point, is he's letting guys go. Now, I get it. The Verana goal, he was straight out of the penalty box. Boom. Great up ice pass. I think it was from Lindstrom. Hit him in stride, in for the goal. But
he gets credit for finishing.
Yeah, absolutely. He finished it. That's the key part there. He didn't pull a helm and go straight stone hands. But
and I don't mean to cut you off, but is there any guy that you've ever seen in the NHL that has a breakaway and you know they're not scoring more than Darren Helm?
Ooh. It's our bias showing there, but I really can't.
No, but man, you can watch a game or, you know, be somewhere and the game's on in the background and you look up and Darren Helm has a 2-on-1 or a breakaway or whatever, and you just know he's not scoring. It sucks, you know, because he, early in his career, he was kind of a finisher. He really was. If you go on YouTube, there's some highlight reel goals of Darren Helm.
Oh, and absolutely. When he looked, the way he looked against Chicago in his early years, like I always think back to the 09 series in the playoffs. Yep. He helped finish them off because he was scoring goals. But anyways, we can go on the Helm saga forever. But I think Verana's looked good. He's been fast. And like what I was saying is Blashill, as much as we have not been a fan of his choices the last several seasons, I think this year, with the way that the roster's been built, it finally has kind of matched the coaching style he has, where it's just they try to cycle constantly. And Verana, much like the way Mantha could have, I think fits that almost better. Now, you can go into the comparisons all day that, oh, Mantha's got four goals in four games and Verana's only got one. Okay, well, again, look at the roster build. You're putting Mantha with two of the best players from their respected countries in Oshie and Backstrom, one of the best assist centers in all of hockey with Backstrom. So not trying to belittle our favorite team here, but they don't have those guys. I love Larkin with everything I got, but he's not Nick Backstrom, at least not at this stage. He's
Nick Backstrom is a borderline Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's close. I wouldn't doubt
it. He might even be a Hall of Famer.
So. Yeah, potentially. I mean, didn't he just eclipse? What was his big milestone?
1,000.
Was it games or 1,000 points, right?
Games.
Okay. What was the biggest assist mark he just had? Was it? It's going to bother me now. I have to look it up.
It's Greg a race. Can cut out anyway, so.
Backstrom. Yeah. He just hit a large milestone.
We were just talking about him on Chicklets today.
He surpassed, I think it was his 700th assist this season. Is he surpassed 700 assists? 974 career. What's up?
700 assists and 1,000 points.
No, not 1,000 games.
1,000 games. I'm sorry.
Almost to. So he is up there. He's going to be one of those guys as a. What do you think? But the stats kind of speak for themselves and what he's done in a per game spell. I think you can put him kind of up there with Hank Zetterberg in regards to some of the best all time Swedes. Sure. So in the Sedins, I mean the Swedes are just a laundry list of players that we could just ooh and ah over nonstop. But he's done it in such a smooth way that it hasn't been overly flashy. But I think that's due in part to the fact that his winger all these years has been Alex Ovechkin, who takes all of that glory. So we'll see. But anyways, overall, I haven't been disappointed and I haven't been amazed by Vrana. He can fly over the ice. He's definitely not afraid to throw his body in there. And I think long term, if they decide to make that move and lock him up, I don't know how that's going to look. I would say maybe it's a 2-year bridge deal, which maybe it takes him to his UFA years, kind of similar to what we saw with Bertuzzi. But it's if the trade was made for a reason, so we can only assume that he is part of Yzerman's long-term plan.
Well, either that or he's going to be an asset and you know, for a trade at the draft or trade to Seattle. Yeah, I mean, you don't know. I would think, given the way that Yzerman spoke about him in that press conference, he likes the player.
I have to agree, because how long can you go trading players to get assets before you really are going to lose the fan base and lose your support?
Yeah, no doubt.
Because I think he's getting into no bullshit territory here. Now, I know that we've been very high on waiting it out and being patient, but it's been, I think Max put an article out, it's been about 3 years since he took over. So when do we start seeing the fruits of the labor is what a lot of people are going to start saying, because
I think this coming
they're going to get upset.
Yeah, I think this coming season the product's going to be a lot more competitive. I think that Jeff Blashill probably won't be the coach, although I know some people say that don't close the book on him coming back. I really don't think he's back. I really don't.
I don't know anymore. I think I'm at that point officially.
Well, Yzerman makes you do that, though. He's not a type of guy that's going to tell you, oh, I'm going to do this, or he's not going to hint one way or hint another way. No, I'm going to have a conversation with him at the end of the season. That's all he said, and that's all he said all year long, and, I mean, that's all there is to it.
I don't know. It's going to be tough because, like I said, you look at what he did this year with what we felt was a significantly better roster when they finally had everyone available and healthy. They've been a competitive team. Are they a great team? Absolutely. No, but he finally had players that weren't the Jonathan Eriksons that we came to loathe. Not saying we hated the person, we just hated the player. And the things that this roster was able to do, I thought was pretty damn effective. And then Bertuzzi went down and it was kind of a wash because we're like, who are they going to bring up? Which we ended up not really seeing a whole lot going on there. So they were effective because, for one, they had better mobility and better defenders on the back end because they made that first pass and boom, they're going. And we know that that is what Yzerman seems to want, is you have to start at the blue line and go forward. Without that, you're screwed. And we can see the last couple games without guys like Nemeth and Merrill, it's hurt them. Yeah, that ability, and they don't have that depth there on defense to be able to get past the oops from a Chalowski or Lindstrom. And I think that's been part of maybe the frustration, if you will, because they go from looking fantastic in that first game against Chicago, then they get shut out. That's their, second, I think, shut out, and third or fourth really bad loss to Chicago this season.
Yeah, I've talked to old coaches and some scouts previously, and old coaches and scouts will always tell you that young teams and young players will look great one night, and then they'll look young and inexperienced the next night. And I mean, that's just kind of what it comes down to at this point. That's where we're at right now, especially at the end of the season, where there's guys that aren't coming back, like Bertuzzi and Bobby Ryan, and you know, some guys like that, that are in and out of the lineup. Like Fabry is in and out of the lineup right now, and Bertuzzi hasn't been here since what, January now? Has it been that long?
He's been frustrating.
Been out a while. Yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, you know, guys like Gustav Lindstrom, now you get to see what guys like Gustav Lindstrom and Dennis Chalowski and guys like that have. Now, I know they're playing Biega. That's nothing more than a spot filler, I think, at this point. But hopefully next year you get to see Seider, and hopefully you get to see a better version of Filip Hronek, because I think he's been subpar at best.
Yeah, he's I think he's been definitely better
lately than, yes,
like when you go back to when we were all being overly critical, I yep. think that's been sort of a turning point. Now granted, he was a leading point getter on the team if you look at the assists and what he was doing there, but I think he's gotten better at being able to get the puck through. He still has the lapses, but I think the midway point of the year on, he's been a better defender. And I'm hesitant to say too many more critical things of his play for the situation of the team.
Yeah, he's a younger guy too, and
yeah, he's only 23.
That's the thing with this team, you know, you don't have a lot of veterans, and now the veterans that you did have, you know, the Nemeths, the Mantha, Merrill. I guess he's not really a veteran, but you know, he's been here
in terms of how long he's been in Detroit. You could
Nemeth,
say so.
Nemeth, you know, Bobby Ryan's out of the lineup, you know, Bertuzzi's out of the lineup. None of it does, you know. So, I mean, they're definitely a young, inexperienced team at this point, and it's definitely not the team that we saw. But I'll tell you one thing right now, they're still staying competitive, they're still busting their ass each and every shift, and I love to see that.
Yeah,
you should too, as a fan.
No, I think that's been a common theme. Is that, yes, there's been games where they have just been destroyed. Nashville in particular, Chicago in particular. They're just like, what? Like the Tampa game where it was, what, 4-0, 5-0 in the first. There's been games where we've sat back and like, what the hell are you guys doing? But then they come out and then they beat Tampa. And then they beat Carolina. They beat Chicago. And then we're even sitting here even more confused. Like, where the hell was this at when you guys lost 7-0 or 7-1? Like, the youth, I think, to your point, that's where it's shining through. Though how long can we go on saying that, oh, they're just young, when they've played one or two seasons in the NHL? Yes, they're 21, 22 years old, but is it the youth or the ability at this point? Like, the mature factor, is that maybe the underlying thing there?
Well, either that or they're just not that good. And that's yeah, why at this point you have Chalowski up and you have Gustav Lindstrom up, and you know, you're gonna have Joe Valeno up hopefully at some point in the season.
I think that's likely to happen based on the fact that he's on the taxi squad and with the uncertainty of what happened with Larkin last night.
Yeah, that's
he did get banged up on a faceoff.
That's another thing. If he doesn't need to be in the lineup, and I mean, the team's not going anywhere. And if he can't be in Larkin's, the lineup,
if Larkin's done for the year, this team's it's going to get ugly.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, as ugly as it can get at this point. But like I said, I mean, Larkin being out of the lineup, I mean, yeah, obviously you could kiss the season goodbye, which, you know, it's been gone.
I mean, the season's gone. We get it.
But I'm just saying, like, if Larkin needs to, like, push it to play, then he might as well sit out. Because at this point, there's no point, you know. It's not like he's chasing a milestone or he's, you know, chasing anything significant other than pride at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if he does go down, then I guess that's time for Rasmussen or Nemestikov to really shine to try to take that place as the number one center. But then do you throw Veleno in the lineup? Be like, all right, here's your trial period.
I would. Why not? I mean, you got 10
games left, I believe.
Eight, right?
Eight games left. There's only eight left? Wow.
Yep.
Man, that's
two with Dallas, one Columbus, one Carolina, two Tampa, and two Columbus, and that's it.
Yeah, yep. There's only eight games left. So, yeah, I mean, if you shut down Larkin, or if he ends up having to be shut down, I guess I should say, then I think it absolutely opens the door for Veleno. But, again, you run into do you do it or not? Because from what I understand, I think Max tweeted this out. He was going through concussion protocol upon returning back to the States. So now he is, what, 20, 21 years old. He's been playing in a men's league over in Sweden. And not saying that he knows how to handle those situations, but you're going to have some of these teams are going to be vying for a playoff spot. Dallas is on the edge. Columbus, I think, is kind of etched themselves out of the picture entirely, which is surprising. I think Detroit actually just passed them. In the standings.
Werenski's out for the season too.
Yeah, but you have Dallas, who is now putting themselves in the position to go for that fourth spot, and then you got Carolina and Tampa, as you mentioned. Like, those are teams that are at the top of this division and league. So this could be a very painful ride, and with team, I don't know if they're going to necessarily rest players. You know, Carolina is going to be firing. Columbus is going to be playing for pride. Because this is likely Tortorella's end of days. In Tampa, they're just big. Like, Killorn the other night was just going on freaking wrecking ball status. So,
well, they have Stamkos out now, and apparently that they might be activating Kucherov and putting Stamkos on LTIR until the playoffs.
Yeah, put your tinfoil cap on for that one, if you will. I mean, to continue on, like, we touched on Rasmussen, as we mentioned we were going to. Like, I think what you're seeing from him, as we mentioned, if Larkin is one guy that goes out, I absolutely would love to see him on top line to see, for one, what he can do. We know that he's a big body out there, and he's not afraid to go to the dirty areas. I wouldn't necessarily call him a grinder, but he is an aggressive player that this team definitely is going to need if things continue to get ugly, because they've had issues with injuries all season, as every other team does. But when you have no depth like Detroit does, it really shines through. But he has been one of those few guys, along with like Adam Ernie, which came out of nowhere, that they've been a bright spot to this roster. So I wouldn't mind seeing a rotation, but seeing him get some top line minutes, and then you see what he can do. We already know that him and Zadina have a great chemistry. If Svech is going to be healthy, which that one's still toss up, which drives me absolutely insane. Maybe you throw Zadina, Verana, and Rasmussen out there and let them go, see what they can do.
Yeah.
So I agree with them that. Continue to be, because we the one goal or the assist that he had that Ernie knocked it home backside reminded me of old school Zetterberg. He dipped the shoulder down, got the arm out, pushed the defender off him, drove around the net, and hit Ernie right in stride. It was beautiful. We're starting to see more of that type of thing from him. So, for one, he's using his body.
Yeah.
And I think that's been critical. And two, he's just, I think the confidence factor, I think, has been the driving point for him this season, because we know he missed some time with injuries. He looked good in Grand Rapids last season, but he didn't have that true chance to shine here, and he's been taking advantage of that this year.
Well, they kind of rushed him because they had to, because he was too good to play in the,
yeah, they lost that year.
WHL, Tri-City Americans, WHL. Yeah, okay. So he was in the WHL, and they kind of rushed him up because he was too good for the WHL, and he couldn't play in the AHL because of the whole NHL-AHL agreement or CHL-NHL agreement or whatever. So he was too young.
It was his problem. Too young, but good to your point. Because of the age, because of the agreement with Canadian hockey, youth hockey, it was you send him back and he goes back and dominates and does things that we just don't need to see him do anymore. Or you try to play him in Detroit for as long as he can. And then once that Canadian juniors is done, then he can go back to Grand Rapids. And that's kind of what ended up happening. And we were like, this guy's a ninth overall pick. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, you know, and the other thing is, too, he's a big guy. You know, big guys sometimes take a little bit to get. He's 6'6", 229, 230 almost. You know, he's a big guy. It takes a little bit of trying to get to know your body and to your point, confidence, you know, that's a huge thing in the game of hockey. So, he's looked really confident out there. He's been physical. He's been fast. He's been big. He's been really actually pretty quick. I don't want to call him fast because I don't think he's a fast skater, but remember in his draft when they drafted him and people are saying his foot speed's not good. His foot speed's gotten much, much, much better. And I think he was one of the guys that worked on skating a ton during the whole quarantine thing.
Yep. So he was one of the guys I think that was in Detroit that was really hitting the offseason program super hard to try to get that up.
Good. And you know what? This is nothing more than a guy that is trying to I guess make the most out of his situation here, you know? I mean, he's a ninth overall pick. It kind of on the fence of being a bust, and he kind of gets out of that and starts playing the brand of hockey that we all thought he could play. I mean, this is a really good story, and hopefully it continues. I really do want to see this continue.
I think it will, and I think that the trade and the comments by Yzerman are what is kind of adding to that level of confidence there for him, because now you've got him name dropping you in these conversations with the media, he being Yzerman. And that's gotta be huge, especially when it's coming from a guy like Steve Yzerman. And whether or not he said that earlier in the season, like he came out with something to prove. And I think that has been really the most impactful aspect of it. And the biggest thing, too, is that he's making an impact on any line that you put him on. It's not just, oh, he's on the second line, he's with better players. No, he's been doing that also on the fourth line with, like we said, Adam Ernie, who has been there the entire time, and Luke Lindenning. But whether they're playing 12 forwards or 11 forwards, he's not afraid to step into a particular role and make things happen. And I think that confidence there has also instilled confidence in Jeff Blashill playing him in those situations. And that's been important. And it's been moving forward. It's going to be especially critical.
I also want to touch on one thing too. If you look at his points from 18-19, when he was, we kind of already brought it, he was a 19-year-old, couldn't play in the AHL because of the whole agreement, whatever. He had 18 points that year, and he played 62 games. He's played half of those games. He's played 32 games this year and has 10 points. I mean, that's extremely impressive considering where limited ice time, exactly. That's impressive considering where we thought this guy was.
Mm-hmm. And that speaks to what he's trying to be. I mean, he's got 14 minutes of ice time this season. 18-19, he averaged only 12. And again, like we said, he didn't get that chance last season. And I think it hurt. But the other thing, too, is while it needs to be improved, they've put faith in him to be an NHL center. And the biggest thing there is that he's been going up and down both ends of the ice. And like we said, he's being physical. He's not afraid to put a body on. He still needs to work on his balance along the boards because it seems like it's like clockwork. Once he gets across the boards, he's falling down. But that's something we talk about. What do
they always say, Ryan? The bigger they are, the harder they fall, don't they?
Yeah, it's always scares me when he does go down. But no, he's one to watch. And the biggest thing, too, is he's 22 years old. He just turned 22. So happy belated birthday there, Michael. But we'll see what he can do. He's a first-round pick. I think he's starting to play more like it. And really, all we can do at this point is hope that what gets built around him will allow him to really excel. And that we can say the same for the rest of the roster, because we already know next season is going to be an entirely different roster. There's no telling who that Yzerman could bring in, who is going to be ready to make the jump to the NHL. The expectation is we're going to have Mo Sider back there. We could potentially have Lucas Raymond. If he continues on his trajectory and cements himself as a 2-3 center, they're in a good spot. They still need a true number one. I think Larkin can be that. And I think that just for how the season has gone, because he's been named captain, maybe, and now with Mantha gone, I think he might be the new enemy number one in the city, which blows my mind. But we'll, it's...
Oh, God. I
think that we're going to go right into that. We're going to touch on Chalowski, but now that I make mention of the Larkin piece, I say we should just go right into it, because Greg mentioned this earlier. You have it
out, by the way.
Yeah, I've got the article up, at least one of them. And of course,
there's more than one.
There's a few articles talking about Larkin, I was actually kind of amazed by this point. So one was just kind of be like, hey, what's going on with him right now? I'm not going to mention who these come from, just out of the sake of the hate or people getting pissed off and this and that. But one article in particular is really debating the fact of whether or not Detroit needs to be worried about Dylan Larkin. They don't question whether or not he is a leader or a great teammate or if people like him. It's whether or not he has the statistics, basically, of being a number one center. Now, this is a debate I think that has gone on since really he's come into the league, of can he be a true number one, or is he more like a number two guy, sometimes a three, depending on the team. And I'm kind of surprised to see that the hate for how this season's gone. Now, I get it. We're probably going to have our homer goggles on a little bit here, but the article goes into mentioning that he averaged 0.86 per game from 18-19, 19-20 for two seasons, and now he's down to a half point a game, 0.52. But the biggest thing from that is he's doing less on the ice in terms of point production and driving play with more time on ice, as he's 15th amongst NHL forwards. So they put in really quickly, so this is the conclusion. Larkin has done less with more ice time this season than any of his peers. But then you look at what this team has done this season. We've already mentioned that Bertuzzi's been out all year. Larkin's been hurt. Half of this roster, or half the forward group in particular, was out due to COVID early on in the season.
Yep.
There's been random injuries throughout. Now, I'm not trying to make excuses, which I pretty much am at this
point. That happens. But you know, the random injury thing, that does happen.
The injury aspect, as I said earlier, on a team that doesn't have true depth, to see what Larkin has not been able to produce, it shouldn't be all that surprising. Yes, they are still likely looking for a top-tier center on this team, because if Larkin ends up being your number two center, you're in a pretty damn good spot by that point. Now, whether or not that becomes a deal that Yzerman can somehow swing and bring in a top guy like that, it's to be seen. But do you think it's fair that Larkin should be getting the criticism that he is with, let's see, what's his points at right now? I think he's tied for the team lead, isn't he?
He's tied with
23 points in 44 games. So I can see why there would be some criticism there, because we, as fans, he's the captain, he's the top center on this team, we're expecting him to be going out there and leading this team and putting goals on the board. It's not happening. However, if you look at his body of play, how many players on this roster can you honestly say in every single game, man, he's flying out there? It's coming. The goal's coming.
Nobody except for Dylan Larkin.
Almost every single game that I've been able to watch this season, he is up and down the ice, going all the way 200 feet, side to side, whatever the width of the ice is. I don't even know the width of the ice. He's in the middle of every play.
85.
He's wreaking havoc. He's pissing people off. Now, the pissing people off thing is another point, but he's doing everything you would expect a top player to do. He's setting guys up. He's getting people in the right position. But not to say that he's – but the problem is the guys that he's been playing with, he lost Mantha. He hasn't had Bertuzzi all year, which I think we realized Bertuzzi really was a bigger cog and asset to this team than we really – I think we took for granted.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I don't know. It's hard for me to really hate on the player with the roster. The other thing, they've had better balanced scoring this season too, which to me has been a promising side of things, or a better side of things. But I don't know. I can understand why people would be hating against him, but at the same time, I don't get it.
These people are absolute clowns that are writing these articles, and I'm not going to name names because that's not here nor there, but these people are clowns that are writing this stuff. He's got 23 points on one of the worst teams in the league. I hate to tell you, he's battled some injuries, and I'm not trying to make excuses for him. Yet, could he be better? Sure. Could he be more productive? Sure. He's not playing with the same people every single night, which he's not. You know, that Mantha had been out at times. He's been out at times. You know, so he's not having a bad season from what I see. And this, again, I don't get into the analytics too much. I do more of an eye test thing, and I do have a base understanding of analytics. But Dylan Larkin's best hockey is still in front of him. And for the people that they're saying that, he may never be a number one center. He may never. What if he isn't a number one center and he's still a really good number two center?
I hope they find a really good number one center then.
Well, and you said, could you go out and get one of those? No, those don't grow on trees, Ryan. I hate to tell you. You have to go out and you have to draft and develop one of those.
Crazy things could happen.
Yeah, crazy things do happen, and you know, people do come over from the KHL and all that stuff. I mean, look at what Minnesota's got with Kirill Kaprizov and all that stuff, or Kaprizov, depending on who you are. But what I'm saying is I wouldn't get your hopes up. I think Dylan Larkin's probably the number one center on this team. Maybe when you're ready to win a Stanley Cup or, you know, get a deep playoff run, he's not the number one center. And if that's the case, then that means either Dylan Larkin's game really went to shit, or it means that somebody came and is much better and much younger than he is and is a number one overall pick or number two overall pick or whatever. And or you know, we sign someone via free agency, which I don't see happening. The last center that, you know, signed via free agency that got a big ticket was John Tavares, and people want him out of Toronto. So, I mean, be Did careful really? What you wish for. Oh, yeah, Did, man.
People, they're never people happy up there anyways.
Him. People are all over him. And you know, I mean, he can, I don't know, whatever. You know how it is. You know how all that stuff goes. But the other thing I will say with this is he's now the captain of the team. There's more pressure there. I look to next year. I really do. I think next year is a big year for Dylan Larkin to prove himself. Either he's a number one center, or that this captaincy is really, something that he's can be more than just the leader. Because there's no question that he's the leader. The question is can he be a difference maker and a yes. hockey player? And I think that is still out there to be said, because he's not playing with elite wingers. He's a great, great playmaker, and he's not playing with great players right now. So it's hard to tell. If you were to slap him up on the second line of the Capitals, centering Mantha and Oshie, how many points would he put up? 70, 80?
90? Almost likely. I think so.
Yeah. So that's my point. It's like,
I don't know about 90, but I definitely think he's a 70-point player at that point.
These people can't help themselves but write these ridiculous articles for clickbait to say, oh, Dylan Larkin's not a number one center. Dylan Larkin is cracking under the pressure. It's like they're still a bottom-feeding team. They're still rebuilding, And Dylan Larkin is unfortunately bearing the brunt of a bad hockey club right now. Are they competitive? Yes. Are they much more competitive than they were last year? Yes, they are. But he's not. I mean, last year he played with Mantha and Bertuzzi most of the year. I know Bertuzzi or Mantha went out with that the injury because of the fight. But I mean, these people just can't help themselves, and that's really my point there.
I mean, we saw what Larkin could do a couple years ago. He had 73 points in 76 games.
The season is that before his best season ever, you think? Like, do you
think that's his peak? No, yes. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Because and that's
you look
point.
At the consist that what is there for him and what he can do. Like you said, him, Bert and Mantha were a perennial powerhouse line in 1920. Mantha went down with injury and it derailed everything. And that was, we're like, well, just think if these guys are fully healthy for an entire year, what they could do. Because early on in the season, I remember us talking about it in 1920. They were on basically a point per game stretch for everybody, all three of those guys. And then Mantha went down and you're just like, well, shit. So if you put equal talent with him out there, he's going to make things happen. Because I think what we run into at this point is he's trying to do more himself. I don't want to say by himself, but he's trying to get guys at his level, whether it be Zadina, which I don't think is very far behind. He really has come along this season, as we've talked about, and he, I think, is going to establish himself as a great scoring winger. It just hasn't – it's not there yet. Keyword yet. And if he does get to that point, say maybe next season – maybe we start seeing him and Larkin click the way Mantha and Larkin were clicking. And then you add Bertuzzi back to the fold if he's going to be still around. We don't even know that aspect of it yet, because now that with Mantha traded, anyone could fucking go at this point. Whether is Larkin going to go? I don't necessarily think so. But no, Bertuzzi, you can't tell me he's off limits at this point. So
no.
The biggest thing is, to me, a lot of these guys – they're not to a level that is going to complement a guy like Dylan Larkin. And he's not necessarily a shoot first player. And I think maybe that's what is angering some people. We know he's got a fantastic shot, but teams are so, because of Detroit's situation and the roster situation, teams can focus on him and shut him down. When they shut him down, nothing else is going to happen. And that's where you really need him to hit that extra gear almost every single game. It's just that who's going to step up with him at that level? And that's the question mark.
That's the problem when you have a rebuilding club and you have a player of his stature who is still young and you can still build the franchise around, which they're trying to do, or at least, you know, build him into the future and the now. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, it's kind of a weird situation for him to be a part of, because, you know, he doesn't really have a lot of the guys that are going to be on the future team, I don't think, yet. Like, I think there's some guys that are there right now. But I also think, you know, the next Red Wing team that makes the playoffs could look, you know, 80 to 90% different than the team that's on the ice, you know, last night. So, you know, like I said, I wouldn't really worry too much. I think next year and the year after are really going to be the years that tell you a lot about Dylan Larkin's career. And I think he's either going to break out or he's going to regress even further. But I don't see that happening. I really don't. You know, guys like Raymond coming up and Valino, and I know he's going to probably be a center, but, you know, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be a part of the team on the power play and all that stuff. So I think people are freaking out for no reason, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, like you said, you look at some of the guys in the pipeline that we've talked about before, and Jonathan Berggren, first of all, he needs to be signed. Because I think he is on an expiring deal. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, will be a UFA at the end of this. He has no contract. So Berggren, 5'10", 183-pound, smaller guy. He definitely reminds me of a Gus Nyquist. He is a pass master. And he's really had a breakout season this year in the SHL. 45 points in 49 games. 33 out of 45 points were assists. I think that this is going to be a big person that they really need to approach and try to pull in, because he's had some injury issues the last couple of years. But now that he's had a full healthy season at the SHL and he's shown what he can do, he's even had 3.3 assists in 7 playoff games so far. I think that that should hopefully be a priority for Yzerman, because he's going to bring an extra level of playmaking that Detroit doesn't really have right now. Larkin has it, but Berggren is, you could say he's kind of a combo, at least in what I've seen, of Zetterberg and Nyquist. Yes, I know that's a very big Swedish comparison. I get it. But he can shoot when he needs to, but he's really going to wow you with that pass, and he's not afraid to do it. He can find a seam pretty much from anywhere on the ice, and if that's somebody that they can bring to this roster, especially with a Lucas Raymond coming in, who is going to be your freaking sniper, and then you add Zadina to that mix, and Larkin and Bertuzzi and so on and so forth, Fabry, Foligno, there's potential, and that's what they need. And because we know that he can't make all the, fill those voids with free agency. I was just looking at centers as we were talking. The only interesting UFA that's going to be upcoming is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. He's 28 years old. Everyone else is an RFA or too old that we would want to look at.
So I would be okay with that.
I wouldn't be mad about it if he got to that point, because how the hell is Edmonton going to re-sign him?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, you know, is it something, would he want to come to Detroit? Does he want to stay in Edmonton? I know he's from Red Deer, or he played in Red Deer, so I don't know if he's got to be a Western Canadian guy, so he's probably going to want to stay up there. But if he doesn't, I mean, Detroit would certainly be an interesting thing, because like we said before, Yzerman's going to have to start building this where you're right. It's like, no bullshit, no more acquiring assets, no more. I mean, obviously you still have to do your due diligence and stuff like that, but you have to start putting things together. Like a guy like Robbie Fabry, you know, he plucked him out of St. Louis, you know, Jacob Verana, you know, you got to start kind of building a nucleus that's going forward, you know, with the exception of, you know, Larkin and Sider and guys that are already in the pipeline, pretty much, or not in the pipeline, already on the, you know, the team, basically.
Yeah, I think with the amount of draft capital that Yzerman has for this season, that this is potentially the last year of really hammering the draft to see what we can get. And then next year moving forward is where we're going to start seeing the roster start coming to shape, and some of these younger guys really trying to make things happen on this team. Because like we said, full roster turnover is coming next season. We know that we're losing somebody in the expansion draft, so there's another slot gone. So if guys are healthy, they come back into this roster and they can actually get some decent depth that are NHL level caliber players that can score. Because like I said, you look at the IR right now, Bertuzzi, Fabry, Bobby Ryan, top 6 players, all hurt, all goal scorers and playmakers. They need guys like that on this roster. Without it, this is what we're talking about right now. So it's just a matter of time. And really, I think that this season, this off season is going to be, the next two off seasons are going to be all or nothing.
Yeah, this one's going to be weird in particular because of everything we're still dealing with. And the one thing I would say about the draft, this coming draft, it's going to be a crapshoot. You know, the Ontario Hockey League just basically canceled their season. Yep. They're not going to play this year, which is terrible for the kids' development and everything else. And we're not going to get into why or anything like that. But it's unfortunate.
Let's, I mean, we know the why. It's just the way things have played out. It sucks.
Yep. There's no other way to put it. You know, it's very unfortunate for those kids and for everything else. I mean, it's a tough situation, to put it mildly there. But
like it really makes this year's draft like difficult to an extent. I mean, yes,
difficult. But it could be something where if Steve Yzerman or some of his scouts have seen some stuff previously that they like. Right. They can take a shot on a guy, you know, in the, I don't know, the third round, where a guy could have been a first round pick if had he played this year.
I think we're going to have Tony on shortly after the season's over to really get his take and feel, because I know it's been a difficult year for him on the scouting side, but we could really get a good idea or window into what we could potentially see coming Detroit's way, because we know that it's been a hard year, but leagues didn't stop playing the NCAA was still playing. We saw some top tier talent in that league this season. USHL was going
at the U of M, you know.
Yep, U of M. We had multiple Beniers or however you say his name, Power. Yeah, a couple of those Beniers, guys over there.
Power and those guys. Yeah, it's funny because you know this draft is interesting because there are good players in this draft. Like Beniers is a really good player. Power is a number one defenseman, I think. Maybe a number two. I mean, if you were to get him in Detroit and play him with Sider or play him on another D pair with Sider, you'd look at your potential Victor Hedman, Ryan McDonough, Sergachev, like that kind of really good future now pipeline of defensemen and decor, which,
yeah, you know, 18 years old, 6'5", 214. Let's just put it into context for people.
Yeah, we haven't had that since Lidstrom and Rafalski and Cronwall and all those guys were here back, you know, in 2009, 10, somewhere around there.
He's the unanimous number one in TSN's midseason draft rankings, and that was just 2 days ago.
Some people are saying Beniers could still go number one, depending on what team gets the number one overall pick.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I mean, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting how it shakes out, and especially as the draft goes on. Like, you know, the first five are usually pretty easy to come up with, even though that some of the guys
we don't know that anymore with what Eisenman's done to us the last couple of years. So we'll see what happens. But without going too deep into the draft stuff, we'll have to get Tony back on after the season's over to get his take and insight on some of these top picks or top prospects. So
I found it out.
With just in the, I don't even know how long we've been on here at this point. I think we're close to an hour. So for the sake of time, and so we don't piss Greg off for having to edit this too much, let's go ahead and jump into final thoughts. And Tyler, take it away.
Yeah. So my final thoughts are, I think Steve Yzerman at first, like, you know, going into the trade deadline, we weren't sure what was going to get done. And he was able to get done a lot more than I thought he was going to get done, especially given how quiet of a trade deadline it was, given, you know, the situation of COVID and everything else. But he got some of the stuff done early, and then he got the big one done on trade deadline day right at 4 o'clock. So props to him. I think he said
done like 20,000 times right there. Continue.
Well, he finished it. He was able to get her done, and okay, I'm going to stop. But anyways, no, he was able to get it done, and at 4:01 or 4 o'clock or whatever it was, and you give him all the credit in the world. And, you know, like I said before, that wouldn't have happened with the previous regime. So I'm happy it was able to get done.
Oh.
There's still things that are going to transpire during the summer and during, you know, as after the playoffs and everything. But for now, I mean, we see what's going on here. The last little bit of the season, as we touched on, it's going to be tough, but you get to see hopefully Valeno and maybe even Sider if his team gets eliminated, although I don't think that's
happening. I don't think we're going to be seeing Sider, especially now with the AHL potentially not having anything much longer of a season. So
what are they going to cancel, or are they just not doing playoffs?
No, from what I've heard is that there's potential of no playoffs, but we'll see what happens there.
I thought they weren't doing playoffs anyways.
Yeah, I don't believe they are, potentially. So that eliminates Sider probably coming back, depending on when the season's over, and Foligno getting down there with him as well. But, all right, Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at SealDog91.
So I was going to... I was fascinated by your amount of duns, but the trade deadline was at 3 p.m., not 4 p.m.
Oh, for Christ.
3 p.m. Eastern. So
3 p.m. Eastern time.
But my final thoughts are, I don't think I really have any this week.
Yes, you do. Come on.
There's eight games left. I think at this point I want to just see a guy like Valeno get into the roster and see what he can do. We know that the skill is there, and it's a very low bar, I think, for him to surpass to make this fan base happy and make the team happy. But they have all the confidence and faith in him in the world, I believe, because he's really made – every year they've asked him to do something different in his development, and he's done it. So now the next one's going to be, all right, let's make this NHL roster. If he can start that now, get in there for these last couple games, let his presence be known, and then boom, in October next season when we're sitting at LCA for the home opener, we're seeing him on the ice, I think it's a success, and that's what we can hope for. So positive things these last eight games is all I can Absolutely. Really ask for and hope for. And I think I will leave it at that.
Get My to Twitter see more of Verana, too.
Yeah, more Verana. So Twitter's already Ryan 33. I've been – other than that, I think we didn't do too bad sans Greg today. I don't have his fun little script for closing us out other than the fact that please go enjoy yourself some Founders, the official unofficial beer of the Grindline podcast. I can't remember it all. Oh, I was going to go.
Just,
I'll leave it on the Founders. Go drink Founders beer.